Hello everybody and welcome back inside the Shark Tank for another episode of your Sail Sharks podcast. My name is Lewis and joining me to discuss a equal parts enthralling and disappointing 31 apiece draw away at London Irish on Sunday is my co-host and good friend James. James, how's it going?
I'm all right, mate. The question that I have for you is, have you strapped yourself in? Because this season is going to be no different from all the others. It's going to be a roller coaster ride. So just sit back and try and enjoy it as best you can, listeners.
Not just from Sail, but actually across the Premiership so far this season. We're going to talk a little bit about that when we chat about the Exeter game later on, I'm sure. But I mean, James, we've got to kind of start with the obvious thing, which is obviously Sail 31-14 up at half-time at the Brentford Community Stadium on Sunday afternoon. At the final whistle, it was 31 apiece. London Irish winning the second half by 17 points to nothing to draw the game. Sail obviously come away from North London with 3 points, you know, two points for the draw and a bonus point for scoring four tries. But I guess from your perspective, you know, is this 3 points gained or is this 2 points lost? It's a hard one.
I think the question we've got to ask ourselves is, would we have taken 3 points before the game? And the answer is, most people probably would, whilst hoping, stroke, borderline, expecting 4 points. You know, you can never take a five-point win for granted in the Premiership, especially with our track record over the last few years. So to get four tries before half-time exceeded expectations. Clearly, from where we were, you know, we shouldn't have lost the game, but we could have easily have lost it. We shouldn't have drawn the game, but we could have easily have lost it. You know, put yourself in the Irish fans' shoes. A few people would be going, okay, well, what was, if that kick had gone over, etc., instead of hitting posts and all that kind of jazz. So I think overall, I stick by what we put out on Twitter after the game, which is that the bigger picture is that 3 points is really not a bad result at all.
Yeah, I err on that side as well, which is that I think given the context of the game and where the Sail squad is at the moment, I think 3 points is a good result. I don't necessarily think Irish are going to be pushing top four, top six again this year. I think I made that clear on last week's pod. But I've got a list here, and this is the players that were on the pitch at the final whistle. So I'm going to start with 15. So Denny Solomona, fullback, Barry McGuigan, Sam James, Manitou Alangi, Marlon Yard, Kieran Wilkinson, Will Cliff. And then in the pack, Ross Harrison, Ruben Birch, who was subbed on for Tommy Taylor at two, Kenny Eustazen, Cobus Visa, JP Dupria, Ewan Ashman, Curtis Langdon, John O'Ross. The fact that you've got two hookers for a start, a player in Ruben Birch who was released by the club 18 months ago, probably your third and fourth choice second rows, and Denny Solomona, who's never played fullback in his life, on the pitch at the end of that game, I think is probably a testament to just how depleted the Sail squad is at the moment. And James, I don't know if you agree, but I think when you look at the fact that Sail lost McGinty and Ben Curry in the first half, you look at the fact that we're missing probably eight or nine frontline starters, I think that adds enough context to say that actually getting 3 points away at a good Irish team is probably a fair result.
Yeah, and I think let's not underestimate the changes before kickoff as well. People have been, you sort of lined up to train all week, and losing the likes of Rafi and Cam Neill as well, you know, especially from defensively in that second half. You know, clearly we missed Cam Neill, even in the first half, actually. You know, they cut through us far too easily in that sort of the channel where he's very effective. So I think that take those changes, then those injuries in the first half, and you take a lot of leadership out of this group. And I think, honestly, if we'd done this pod, if we could sort of go back to the restart of last, you know, the season before last, and we're sort of in August or something, and we said that we were expecting to come in the top four and hoping to push top two, and then listed off the bench we've gone into this season with, you know, and starting with Raffi Quirk and Kieran Wilkerson coming off the bench and kicking goals, and Bevan Rodd starting at one. We would have thought we're fucking nuts. Excuse the language, listeners. I know this is a family podcast, but it's true. You only have to go about 18 months and we would have thought we were completely nuts with the team and the players. Sam Dugdale, Ruben Birch, I mean, Ewan Ashman, who was he? You know, Curtis Langan, was he going to be good enough? Blah-de-blah. Don't forget about how much this team has been fast-forwarded, right? But let's not get ahead of ourselves. A lot of these guys are really young. They're still relatively inexperienced. We're missing a lot of senior players. We have people, you know, over in Australia doing absolutely nothing instead of being back here. Tom Curry's not available. I'm playing basically a whole game of the first two games of the season without Ben Curry is a massive problem. You know, not having a specialist date, no Josh Beaumont, who looks like he's out for some time. You know, Phillips has had his teeth kicked in, another experienced senior player. You know, we really are on the edges of our first team squad here. You know, we're right down to the last people who you would say could play senior rugby. After this, you know, you really are into kids. I mean, you're into proper kids. So I think there's a bit of perspective there. And I sensed quite a lot of frustration and anger on our three-word reviews that had a slightly different view than what I've just expressed.
Yeah, so you've set it up very nicely to kind of go straight into three-word reviews. And there's that, and there's another theme that comes through, which kind of all comes back together. And I'm sure people who listen to this podcast every week know where we're going with this. But Ian, Curry's for captain. Nicholas Waite, pack paper thin. Peter Taylor, 2 points lost. Max Boyle, good grief, Jono. Joe Russell, lean Manu, good. David Love, Manu looks good. Niall Martin, halftime Melbeck, and then Jonathan Gibson, AJ the difference. These sort of issues and themes that we're going to chat about, I think, end up doing being very cyclical because, you know, we've just spoken there about the likes of Ruben Birch, Ewan Ashman, very, very young players, and we forget how young they are. In that situation, Sailor 31-19 up with 20 minutes to play, etc., you need your senior players to step up in any situation. But when your senior players are playing with the kids, you really need them to step up. And as obviously our fan base has kind of pointed out, there was a big issue with that happening on the pitch in that last 20 minutes. And then that came in the form of Jono Ross, who got himself yellow carded for one of the worst infringements I think I've seen in a long time, just for the needlessness of it. Bending his run out of the line to hit Sean O'Brien for no reason. And I don't want to put this on this draw on Jono Ross because I don't think that's fair. And I think the writing was always on the wall with the Irish team in the last 20 minutes and the fact Sale were on the back foot. But I guess it leads to a very pointed question, James, which is, you know, Jono Ross has been made club captain again for the third or fourth season now. But I mean, surely there's got to be some questions being asked about his fitness for that role, given what we saw on Sunday.
Look, you know, you had to listen to the Alex Sanderson interview afterwards, and it's clear that Jono's beating himself up. I think that the one thing that, you know, you have to take the rough with the smooth a little bit with players, and Jono gives us absolutely everything, and he's a very emotional player, and he needs that level of emotion to bring the level of physicality that he brings week after week, running into brick walls, hitting rocks, making the tackles. You know, I hope there is nothing from any Sale fan which is questioning his commitment to the club. There is absolutely, you know, I really don't see that. I think he's probably the most committed player that potentially has ever put on a Sale shirt. He really is an extraordinary man. The bad side of that is sometimes, you know, that emotion flips over into making mistakes. Now, that's the rough with the smooth. The difference is the context, as you said, lots of kids on the pitch. He's the senior player. So you have to keep your cool under pressure. And the second thing is he's the captain. So, you know, last season, You know, in business, you know, I talk a lot in my role about role modeling behavior and living out, you know, living out that behavior every day through every interaction, because, you know, people look to you for leadership and end up replicating behavior through the organization. So you better be role modeling the right stuff. Last season, we had it was almost hilarious because we were winning, so we could have a laugh about it. But we spent like half of the running like with 13 players. So, and this is not the first time that Jono has been yellow carded for something stupid. And in fact, it's one of many examples, I'd say. And therefore, you have to start to say, is this a kind of behavior that he's not able to change? It's too embedded and is replicating itself through the side. Now, we haven't had many yellows this season just yet. We have had one each game, which probably isn't... Which is not a great run rate to start it, but it's still, we're averaging better than last year. but the point is, I think it is a thing. I don't want him sort of, you know, truly beating himself up here and you know, thinking it's, as you say, this particular example, it was to blame, because, you know, there are other reasons, plenty of other reasons. There's always a number of reasons that come together that lead to a final outcome. But overall, I do think that controlling the emotion on the pitch, if he's going to remain our captain, is his number one priority.
I think that's all very fair. I think it's a very fine line that we have to manage as a team and as a club, especially at the moment, given how shallow the pool is, so to speak, pardon the pun, etc. You know, I think, you know, in a different situation, you know, potentially, you know, look at like last year or the year before, when there's a bit more depth in the team, is, you know, maybe you sit him out for a week and say, look, let's just, you know, get your head right and get back into it. But obviously what happened on Sunday is very unfortunate, but Sale genuinely don't have any other options to play at number eight at the moment. So it is going to have to be a very sort of quick turnaround. And this is going to be a testament, I really think, of Sale's fortitude and their credentials as a top four challenger team. Because I think what we saw last year was actually Sale had a pretty clean bill of health and they had a good run of form when it came to injuries. We weren't really missing any players. You could play the Duprees up front. You had all your backline basically available. It wasn't perfect, but, you know, for the most part, you had everyone you needed. We've had the opposite this year, where we've been absolutely decimated, not just by injuries, but by international call-ups. And that's the downside of having a team full of internationals, and it's how you weather that. And I think, looking at what we saw on Sunday, it is going to take a big lift in training this week to get yourself back up. Because, James, I guess the thing I want to kind of get to here is, how deflated do you think Sale as a team are going to be? Not with the fact that they drew at London Irish, but the fact that they drew after being in seemingly total control in the first half. How do you recover from something like that?
I think they'll be okay. I think that Sanderson spent a lot of time and effort bringing in mental resilience into this squad. And, you know, I think we can take a lot of positives out of that first half, which remains, when we are playing well, there aren't many teams we can get anywhere near us, frankly. You know, we saw what AJ did, you know, just coming straight off the plane, straight in. I hope he's okay and hasn't damaged his collarbone badly, because I think the Eagles will need him as well. The Eagles have got games coming up against Uruguay that I'm sure he'll want to make himself available for. Either way, Sale might be without him a little bit over the next few months and weeks. But he was brilliant. I think Manu as a 12 suddenly became a very big figure for us and really, really very interesting. And we looked dangerous in attack and we just dominated possession. So I think we've been complaining about lack of try bonus points, difficult to watch. We don't score much more than 20 points, so we have to make sure we defend, you know. Suddenly, we've scored a lot more points than that. We've got our four tries. So you have to take some positives, and I think that Sanderson will spend a lot of time taking some positives. It's another game in the bank for a lot of young players. You know, Wilkinson has now played a half, you know, and it all just adds to it. And I think there will be an admitted, look, we've had a lot of change during the week, a lot of people getting injuries, pulling out. Any team that has that many, it is disruptive. We still came out with 3 points. So I think that they will be okay. I genuinely think they'll be okay. I think it's unfortunate we're playing Exeter. I know that they're like bottom of the league or next to bottom in the league. but they're going to be up for making a point, and it's a difficult thing to do against Exeter. I mean, what do you think? You know, how do you think Sale will respond to this as a squad?
I think there is a onus on from the coaching staff about that. I mean, these are all very buzzwords, but that kind of commitment and resilience, and the fact that, as you quite rightly pointed out, this team has been incredibly disrupted in the last couple of weeks. That was accentuated in warm-ups. It was then accentuated in the first half. And we came out of it with 3 points at a London Irish team with a crowd, playing in front of a crowd for the first couple of times. I think on the whole, it's a good result. And I think Sale as a team, and Sale with the coaching staff that they've got, will be drawing upon that. Because ultimately, if I'm Ruben Birch, I'm thinking, well, I played my role in making sure we got out of there with 3 points. You know, you're not worried too much about dropping the two. Because I think as great as it would have been, you saw the writing was on the wall in that second half. You know, Irish were bringing out Sean O'Brien, you know, and, you know, rolling out all the kind of Alan Dell, all the kind of players that they've, you know, trying to build their squad around, and, you know, we're throwing out kids. And I think from Sale's perspective, and if Sanderson's got his wits about him, which we know he does, he'll be pointing out the positives from this game, which is you strip away all the context, you come away with 3 points with literally figuratively the bare bones of your squad showing. Because let's not forget, on the bench you had Gus Waugh, who this time last week was supposed to be playing for Doncaster. Like, you are really scraping at the margins. So I think, you know, from Sale's perspective, they've got to look at that and say, look, every team is going to go through this period of adversity. It's how you come out of it. And I think so far, from the first step, they've come away after a pretty below par performance against Bath with 4 points. They've again had to face this adversity against Irish, and they've come away with 3 points. You know, Sale, as it stands, have got 7 and are in the top 4. So, you know, I think there's plenty of positives, and Sanderson will be drawing upon that. And I actually want to touch upon those positives a little bit more, James, because you mentioned a couple of players there, but there's a couple that I wanted to highlight specifically. And let's start with Manu Tuilagi, who it's quite publicly been made aware that he's had a fitness regime change, let's say, and he's made a concentrated effort to shed some of the pounds. He looked fantastic on Sunday, and it really stands to reason that that was by far his best performance in a Sale shirt.
Oh, miles, by far the best. And what was striking was that his pace, you know, considering he's, you know, entering his early 30s now, you know, the side step off his right foot, seeing the space, and then, you know, the inside pass to Will Cliff, perfectly timed. You know, these aren't, you know, strengths you'd associate with Tuilagi. But it's the pace that got him into that position. It was nothing to do with power at all. And then, you know, every contact, he just drove through it. He's not lost any of his power. And that's because he's now getting to the gain line quicker. And he's also able to use a little bit of footwork as well. So as always with Manu, it's his workload. You know, off the bench, we didn't have a centre, so we're asking him to play 80 minutes. You know, I expect to see him rotated out against Exeter as long as Van Rensburg is fit. Even if he's not, you'd think about maybe Sam James or Connor Doherty will come in. I think two big games for Manu is enough. But it's great to see him do that, and hopefully we get a whole season out of him. One player that I was going to mention that it'd be good to get your view on is Will Cliff, because I think, you know, we've been a big fan of his, and, you know, in 2020 he had a storming year, and it's fair to say 2021 has been a difficult year for Will. You know, he's looked a little bit off the pace. You know, we wondered whether, you know, his age was finally catching up with him or whatever, but in that first half especially, he was absolutely outstanding. And not just the try, you know, the quick ball from the base of the ruck, you know, it was his offload that led to the McGinty try. His kicking was out of hand, was outstanding, pinning them back into corners. He was making good decisions. He was on the inside line following up breaks. You know, if Rafi or Faf had done what he did in the first half, our South Shark supporters wouldn't be able to get over themselves about how amazing it all was. So we have to give, we've been a bit critical last few months. We have to give massive credit where it's due with Will Cliff, wouldn't you say?
I'd agree with that. I thought he was absolutely fantastic. And we spoke not even 10 minutes ago about the need for senior players to really step up when you're having to marshal the kids around the field. And that is what Cliff did. You know, in that first half, admittedly, there's a few more senior players on the pitch. But, you know, Sale as a team, the way our squad is built and designed and the players we've got, we are a very playoff nine heavy team. And that doesn't really change, regardless of if it's De Klerk or Quirk or Cliff playing. And what we did really well in that first half, a bit like we spoke about last week, is, you know, we kind of took the fight to them up front. And to do that, you need a nine who's going to marshal the team and play field management and move the opposite pack around. And he did that really well. But then when the gap started to emerge, you know, he was there on the support lines. You know, he was there, you know, getting to the base of a ruck and you know, playing the ball quickly. And then for his try at the end of the first half, absolutely fantastic bit of heads-up play. And it's that experience and it's that sort of knowing where the gaps are going to be and how the opposition are going to react to certain in-game situations. That does show, you know, we've got a lot of depth at the nine position. And if we, by we I mean Alex Anderson obviously, manage the squad properly, someone like Will Cliff is going to be so valuable to us being a team that competes on two fronts, because there are going to be games this year, not even, you know, in the next like month or so, where Will Cliff is genuinely going to be the better option than De Klerk or Quirk because of what we need from our nine. You know, you're getting towards the winter months, you need someone who can steady the pack, you know, you need someone who can steady the back line, someone who can just box kick it for days. And I thought we saw a really good example of that. You know, we've not seen Will Cliff for a number of weeks going into last season as well. And I thought Sunday was a really timely reminder of that kind of veteran presence that occasionally you do need, rather than the pure sort of dynamicism and skill of a Quirk or that kind of world-class playmaking that you would get from De Klerk. So I thought he was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, we could kind of go through the team and pick out lots and lots of players, but there's just one I wanted to kind of finish up on, and that was Marlon Yard, who I thought, again, had a really good first half. And I just wanted to get your thoughts really quickly on his try, which came from broken field play. And I think, in my mind, it might have been the first time in a good few months where we've seen one of our wingers just pick up the ball, spot a gap and go straight through it and just create something out of nothing. And, you know, we've spoken a bit. Solomon is going to play a bit of 15. Byron McGuigan is into his early 30s now. Sale is still really dependent on their 9, their 10, their 12 to orchestrate play. We don't have that kind of X factor in the back line. So I don't know, what did you think of Marlon Yard's try? And do you think that's, again, just another step in that very long road of recovery that's taken place since that knee injury a couple of years ago?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. The journey that Marlon's taken, and he's one that has gone to a different level, or gone back to the level that we knew he was capable of with Alex Anderson's arrival. His commitment on the kick chase, okay, he did get it wrong. And sometimes he's a bit eager. He got pinged for offside a few times. So, yeah, he epitomised, I think, the kind of the two sides of the coin Sale performance of this week. I think he had a difficult second half and was absolutely outstanding in the first half. In terms of his try, I mean, it goes back to that Will Cliff moment again, just flinging it behind. You know, not something you usually associate with Will, just sort of, you know, just doing something a bit out of character and flinging it in, not in particular to anybody, just to keep it in. And then Marlon picked it up. And what I really like about him is he wasn't actually, you know, spotting the gap and going for it. He actually picked it up, ran in both hands, you know, until he found the opportunity. He didn't see it straight away. He went looking to see what the options were. Heads up rugby, ball in both hands. Okay, for me, he was probably never going to pass it, and Curtis Rona should have smashed him. Instead, he sort of put one hand out and Yard scored. I thought it was very poor defence. But that, again, I like it because I think that Sale under both Diamond in the recent past and then under Sanderson when they come in, they have been, we have been open to the accusation of being a bit processy driven. You know, 1-2-3 face and then a certain play. Yeah, chip over the top, box kick, you know, whatever, give it to Manu or Van Rensburger for the best kind of thing, or does it to Dupreez? I think that what that showed was that we do have players that are willing to look up and call it on what they see. And I just really enjoyed, I really enjoyed that. And I thought that the Wilcliffe try was similar. And the Manu Tuilagi, I just thought they played what was in front of them. And we haven't seen that from a Sale team for a long time. So it's there. We have it in us. And it wasn't just AJ reliant, by the way. I think Cliff allows us to play off 10 a lot more because, you know, he is less of a threat around the actual ruck area and he looks to get it into McGinty's hands. And his accuracy of his pass is, you know, very good. And it allows McGinty to become a bit more of a decision maker. And I wondered if that helped us just get a little bit further out wide compared to normal. But, you know, I think we can play that way with Wilkinson or Rob Dupreez, who are really good with ball in hand. I think the question comes of when De Klerk and Quirk play, you know, how do we change the way we play for that? But I thought Marlon had a good game. Thought Sam James had a good game. You know, as I said, it was one of those where it's just difficult to say, really, because it was like watching a different team in the second half. And although there were massive changes, there were plenty of the same players still on there. You know, I thought Tommy Taylor and Shonet looked really solid in the scrum. You know, we've been pinged quite a lot with Bevan Rodd at one. And I think with Tommy Taylor and Shonet together, it was the first time that we looked pretty solid with Bevan starting at one. So I thought that was promising. Line out was good in the first half as well. There was only one overthrow, I think, from Tommy, but we still managed to recover the ball. So I think that looked good. I think we're just looking very short in the back five of the scrum, second row and back row. I mean, we really are running out of players to put on the pitch, and I'm really worried about Ben Curry Lewis. Really worried about him. It's the second time he's been off with a knock to the head in two games. I think there'll be an enforced rest now for an extended period. And I think this is a problem for us. Do you know when Tom Curry's going to be available again?
Not off the top of my head, but I believe it was supposed to be early October. So don't quote me on that, but I think the rest period, given when the Lions toughenage was supposed to be 8 weeks, I think. So that would take you through August and September into October. But you've certainly put me on the spot there. But I think it's a great point about Ben Curry because, you know, as we start to sort of pivot this conversation and start talking about Exeter next week, you saw it at the end of this game against Irish where the real holes were. You know, we said, you know, 20 minutes ago, you know, we had two hookers on the pitch at the end of the game and, you know, they were, that were actually was par for the course given that we were having to play you and Ashman in the back row because of the injuries to Van der Merwe at two originally, and then obviously with Ben Curry going off. So it is a concern, and I think it's difficult because, you know, as we kind of wrap this conversation up, on the day, you know, we should have beaten Irish, yes, but given the holes in the squad, fair enough. We're now going back home and playing an Exeter team that's got off to a really tough start to the season. As you mentioned earlier, it's going to be looking to make an impact. And I am not just worried about Ben Curry, I'm worried about the team because I think, maybe your preview will prove this wrong, but it does feel like if we go out against Exeter with the same team that we finished Sunday's game with, there is going to be trouble.
Yeah, I think there is. It's the lack of experience, but it's also the lack of balance in the team. You know, the way Sanderson set this up is very much in an Exeter and Saracens mould where everyone knows their job in certain positions. And because we're now way down the list in terms of some of these roles, like bringing Reuben Birch off to play, you know, we don't know where Matt Postlethwaite is. We know Josh Beaumont's out for a while. We don't know what Phillips's Teeth's state is in. We just got to hope that some of these players are coming back into this squad because we really, really need them. And you know, we need Jono to get his mindset and bring the leadership. So, yeah, I mean, looking at Exeter, I mean, the only good news there is that, you know, we've got 7 points from two games and haven't lost yet this year, and they've played two, lost two. They got battered at Welford Road. And okay, Leicester are clearly going to be a top four contender this year, especially with George Ford available potentially all year round. That, you know, that's compared to our season preview, Lewis, that is a big game changer. We identified them as at least top six, but with George Ford available all year, that could make them top four. But even so, it shows where Exeter are at. And then to lose at home against Saints, I think they lost at home against Saints last year as well. So they've got a bit of a hold over them, and I think that they're starting to lose a bit of confidence. I saw the Leicester game, and there's a bit of frustration around the team. I think their squad is very, very stretched as well. I mean, clearly they have some internationals that aren't available, but they have a lot of injuries as well. And their squad, especially in the second row, very, very stretched. Someone like Don Armand, who really hasn't played much in the last 2 years, he started both games, and he's in his mid-30s now. So I think they're hoping for a bit of leadership there. But I think I think they've been moved around. I think because September's also been, the grounds have been so hard. I mean, this is like playing in the back end of last season, June. It's not helped Exeter. I think that they're a bit short. And I also think that the change in, they're short. And I think where that affects them is it's affecting their phase play game going time and time again, because they impose their physicality on the opposition and they're just not able to do that. So what's plan B, and plan B for them has always been, we'll ship it out the back, play around the edges. But honestly, if you're not winning the gain line, that's very, very difficult to do. And then the other thing that's changed for them is this new law variation. So if you're held up over the line, it's a goal line dropout, like in rugby league, right? Which is just a nightmare for Exeter, because where they score their points is by saying, okay, well, we're going to go again at the line, and eventually we'll get over. And if we don't, it's a 5 metre scrum, right, where we're also going to be pretty dominant. So, the threat of having to field it in the backfield and then getting tackled on the 22 and having to start again, it's changing their mentality. And it's also changing the way people defend those moments as well, which has become a lot less about kind of holding the line and more just get under them and let them come over the line. And I think the other thing is that they've been getting pinged a lot in the scrum. Harry Williams is having a really difficult time in the last 12 months. Hepburn is now first choice on the loose head. Ben Moon's coming to the end of his career. The other issue on the tight head for them is that Thomas Francis has left the club, which is a big loss for them. And they've got Marcus Street coming through, but he's injured at the beginning of the season. So I think that's a bit of an issue. The other thing is there's a bit of change in guard in this team. So Josh Hodge has been first choice at 15 at the end of last season, beginning of this season. He's not yet rock solid. I think he's full of talent. Clearly, he's full of talent. We can all see that. We knew that when he was coming through the age groups. I think ideally they wouldn't be looking to play him as often as they have been doing. He's capable of making a mistake and conceding and losing them the game, basically. You've got him at 15. Jack Maunder at 9, now out and out first choice. Nick White's back in Australia. Is he definitely a title-winning 9? Well, he has been, because he's got it. He's got the medals to prove it. But he's still quite young. Is he the general that's required at 9? I'm not 100% sure. He's a good player, but with the others being short elsewhere. Joe Simmons is carrying a leg injury. And suddenly they look a bit short at 10. They've got Skinner as second choice at 10. He's like 24 now. He hasn't proven himself in the Premiership. This is not Steenson's Simmons situation. And then they've got Tuima as well at 8, who's a big lad, 6'4", absolute monster. I think he could become a really good player if he can get his fitness right. But again, he's in a decision-making position. He's not proven himself. So this is a very different looking Exeter side, bit of a changing of the guard. Maybe they're renewing their squad. They've got a brilliant academy down there. And, they're hoping to get in the top four, still be competitive and eventually come again, maybe in 2 or 3 years' time when some of their players are a bit more experienced that are coming through. So we'll see. But we know as well that there's some ongoing arguments off the pitch. There's been a big rumble about sponsorship. Then suddenly they're starting to look a bit like, Sale under Diamond. Everyone's sort of loving to hate Exeter at the moment, which is quite a weird turnaround in a short space of time. It's putting pressure on the club, I think. The logo situation around the racism you know, of that. I think, you know, that some of the rugby community are turning on them. And I think that, you know, that they've got a bit of bunker mentality. Slade's come out with a few comments about the vaccine. I think that things aren't all that well in Exeter, and it's not just because they've lost the first two games of the season. So, you know, look, I think that for them and for us, squad is tested. It's two systems and processes. Exeter won't feel under pressure because they've won lots of premiership. You know, they've won premierships recently. It could go either way. It's difficult to say. But for me, I'm actually choosing two bats as my head-to-head. I had to choose Facundo Cordero because whilst he's not in the same league as his brother, Santiago, you know, he's still brilliant to watch. And with Marlon Yard being so up for it and fierce at the moment, it's going to be really interesting to see those two different styles of play. You know, Marlon's become a very physical player. Cordero's about avoiding all physicality at all costs. So I think that that'll be a tremendous head-to-head. But my question to you is, you know, how serious a situation do Exeter find themselves in here? Or can we expect them to turn up like they always do and impose their physicality on us? And, you know, in what way does Sale need to play this weekend against them?
Well, I think, you know, the reports of Exeter's demise are greatly exaggerated. You know, this is a team that, as you've rightly said, is going through a lot of turnover at the moment, on and off the field. You just have to look at their squad list and some of the players that they're missing. A bit like Sale. You know, I think if Sale had lost their first two games of the season, which we weren't far from doing, you know, we'd be in a similar situation and we'd be saying, well, you know, are we really the 11th ranked team in the league or are we just a bit unlucky? And I think there's a bit of that to Exeter as well. That said, that invincibility or sort of inevitability to Exeter seems to be cracking a little bit. There was always this sense that you would always struggle to completely kill them off and it'd take a Jack Yandel red card to really finish a game against them. You know, and that definitely does seem to be going, you know, two losses on the bounce, you know, to two teams that they probably shouldn't have lost to, I think will contribute to that. That said, Exeter as a team, you don't get that good for that long without having something happening on the training pitch and in the club and all the rest of it. So I think, you know, there'll still be a top four team at the end of the season. Maybe it won't be as cut and dry as it was. But, you know, these are the sort of early season games that you've got to be careful not to put too much weight into. You know, this time last year, or the same part of last season, you know, Newcastle looked like they were going to run away with the title. Things change over the course of the year, and I think Exeter, there's enough talent in this squad. There's obviously enough depth in terms of their academy players coming through and their actual size of the squad as well, you know, to weather the storm that they're facing a little bit. You know, and I think, again, you only have to look at the team that they put out last week and the likes of Cordero and Hodge and Slade, Devota. You know, there's plenty of talent in their back line to light up a game, even if their pack isn't firing. So I think, you know, I'd write off Exeter at our peril. I think they're still a very good team. And if Sale are going to beat them, they're going to have to bring it on Saturday. That said, how do Sale beat them and how does Sale prepare for that? Well, so much of it, unfortunately, just depends on who's available. Because I meant what I said, you know, earlier, which is that, you know, so much is going to come down to, okay, have Rafi and Anaka, you know, return from their injuries? You know, was it just a knock that needed a week off? What's happening with Ben Curry? What's happening with AJ McGinty? Because I think if you let's say you have those four players in the squad, it's a very different looking proposition for Sale, even missing the Dupriers and De Klerk and the rest of them, than it is if those players aren't available. And if we have a team that's similar to the one that finished against Irish, I think we are going to really struggle. That said, if we do get some of those players back, if Tom Curry, you know, is available, etc., the game changes quite a lot. And so it's very, very difficult at this point. And this is a testament to how decimated the squad is by injuries and absences, that I don't feel particularly confident making any sort of prediction for this game because I just don't know what the squad's going to look like. And until you have a sense of that, it's really difficult to know how Sale are going to play on Sunday. With that all being said, James, I guess we, I guess is there? I was going to ask: are there any changes that you think we could make to the squad, or any changes that you would make to prepare for it, regardless of who's available or not? So I'll let you answer that, and you know, feel free to say no.
Well, I do think that we're due one set of rotation. I think it'll only be, you know, I think in the backs we've got a bit more scope for doing it. We've not seen Luke James yet this year. We don't know if he's injured, but he might be rotated in either by Hammersley or even at 13 instead of his brother. But Sam is looking sort of absolutely business critical again for us this year as a specialist 13. You know, I wouldn't be subbing in Solomon at 15. I just worry that that, you know, Joe Simmons, Henry Slade will just start pulling him to pieces in terms of where he's positioning. So if Solomon is going to come in, I'd bring him in on the right wing instead of McGuigan. Aaron Reed hasn't had a look in, but I won't change both wingers. I'd only look to change one. I think Marlon Yard deserves another go. He's been in such good form, but I might bring Solomon in on the right wing. And I think the Manu will be rotated out, whether he rotates to the bench, I'm not sure. Fingers crossed Van Rensburg is fit. He was on the bench first game of the season. I don't know, you know, if he just wasn't selected last week, but I'd love that, being Ram Rensburg in at 12. And if he's not available, then obviously Sam Hill against his former club, I think, brings an extra bit of spice to it. Rafi comes back in to start for me if he's fit and available. Jono has to go again at 8. We've got to pray to the gods that Cam Neill is fit at 6. And Sam Dugdale, you know, if he's good to go again at 7, if Ben Curry's not available. If Phillips is back, then I'd have him on the bench. I'd go again with our second rows. Hooker, Acker's had a week off now, so presumably he just comes back in. Probably keep with Langdon on the bench, give Tommy Taylor a break. He's had a good stint now over the first two games and acquitted himself well. And I think he'll be needed a lot in the winter months. So I'd like to see Acker and Langdon go at 2. Maybe Harrison comes in at 1. So there is a few changes that I'd make. What about you?
I think I agree with all of those. The one I'd like to see, and I don't know if it's because of injury so far, but I'd like to see Simon McIntyre get a run out. And again, I don't know if it's rotation or what, but I'm looking at this Exeter team and you think even missing some of their best players and changing the guard, you still need a lot of weight in that pack. And I think that's why if James Phillips is available, you get him involved as well. Because actually, you know, we kind of forget because they're all massive rugby players, but, you know, our back row, if it's you and Ashman, Sam Dugdale and Ruben Birch in the second row, it's relatively lightweight because these players are at the beginnings of the career. And so I think that there might be a little bit of rotation that I think we have to make just to make sure we can really pack down. And I think McIntyre over Bevan Rodd might be a choice that we make deliberately in advance of that. But otherwise, it's just, yeah, next man up, whoever's available. And I think in the back line, it sounds like we have a little bit more flexibility in terms of what we want to do because we've got a few more players available. But I think you're right, Tuilagi coming off the bench is probably the right decision. I'd like to see Van Rensburg get a run out. And I think, again, you know, we are struggling for players. We're not going to have that ascendancy up front. And I think if it's me, I'm probably looking for the bigger boot and better positioning of a Luke James over Simon Hammersley at 15 if he's fit. I think we can kind of, these are all really minor stuff that we wouldn't really have to bother about if we had our full strength pack. But when your sort of strength is depleted, you have to start thinking very tactically about the players that you're playing in the back line. And to that end, I would really like to see Luke James involved, especially if we're missing AJ's boot as well. So with that all said, James, prediction time. I know so much of it is going to depend on what gets announced at Friday lunchtime, but how do you see Sunday's game going?
It's whatever happens, it's going to be tight and it's not going to be high scoring. And it's just that I've just got, I mean, you know me, I always try and be positive and back the boys whenever I'm uncertain. I'll always go, back the boys for a win. But this time, I just have to say, I've just got a nagging feeling that Exeter are just kind of, you know, that somebody's going to get it. And it's whether it's us or whether it's the next lot that they play next week. I think Exeter losing three in a row, I just think it's very, very unlikely, law of averages. And we're short on players, lots of disruption to the way we're going to be able to train. I just think it's going to, Exeter are going to scrape it and it's going to be like 19-17 or something like that. What about you?
Exactly the same. I think it's going to be 17-11 to Exeter. I think it's conditions aren't supposed to be particularly good either, which I think will favour Exeter over us. And yeah, I think it'll just be an arm wrestle. And I think unless AJ's fit and healthy, it's going to be really difficult to kind of conjure that X factor that we might need to beat an Exeter team that's going to be, you know, probably dominant over us in the forwards. And that bit of AJ magic isn't going to be there anyway, because if he is fit, he'll be off with the US, who will play in Uruguay next weekend. So it's going to be really, really difficult. I just think we're just a little bit too short on everything at the moment to get a win, unfortunately, which is why I've gone for a Chiefs win. But I think if Sale can come out of this stretch of three games with the injuries that they've had with 8 points, I think that's a pretty good start to the season, all things considered. That's the kind of main chat done for the week. And just before we sign off, there's one other thing I wanted to ask you about, James, which is obviously since we last spoke, the training squad for England has been announced. And Sale are very well represented in Eddie Jones's 45-man selection. So Sale have 4 players in the squad, Bevan Rodd, Tom Curry, Rafi Quirk and Manu Tuilagi. What were your thoughts on the 4 players picked? And is there anyone from a Sale perspective first that you were surprised to see in?
I was surprised to see Rafi, because when the squad was announced, he's only played 1.5 games from the start in his Premiership career. So I think, you know, for all of us, we are a bit blinded to that. I think there'll be a lot of supporters elsewhere. Of nines who are, you know, still playing quite well, who would be like, you know, okay, Rafi's a talented guy, but he's started 1.5 games, so he's not been tested yet. So I was surprised to see that, especially because I think that Jack Van Poortvliet, I think, is a very, very good player, same age, and just got that tiny bit more experience. But I think it's fantastic. I think that Rafi's got X Factor all over him, and, you know, I actually don't think we'll see very much of him because they picked 4 scrum halves in the squad. You know, I think Dan Robson's going from strength to strength this year. Harry Randall probably deserves a little bit of a go. And Ben Youngs is still a favourite and in the squad. He's not dropped out like George Ford. So I don't think Ben Youngs is there to make up the numbers is the point. But the experience will be fantastic. We've just got to hope he gets released back to his club if he's not playing. Bevan Rodd, I think they're right to stick with him. I think he's got natural talent. I think he'll come on with his scrummaging very quickly in an international environment. So I'm excited about that from a Sale perspective. Again, you know, actually, there's a bit of change there. Marla's back. Hunapola's gone. So, you know, he's fighting for that slot in behind with sort of Benno Urbano. I think he's got a good chance of getting a cap this autumn. I really do. Tom Curry and Manu Tuilagi go without saying. Manu's return for England is really, really important. I think, in terms of somebody who's missing, you know, I would like to just name call Ben Curry, because the amount of sevens that have been named in the squad, it now puts him down at like 5th or 6th best seven in the country, which we know is a load of absolute bollocks. You know, Jack Kenning, okay, he's just won the Premiership, but like he's come from absolutely nowhere. He's only like a year younger than Ben Curry anyway. I'd like to see him in a head-to-head against Ben Curry. Underhill and Tom Curry, you can't really argue with, but then, you know, for Ludlam and Ludlow to get ahead of Ben Curry, it's now got to the situation, I'm afraid, and this is not nice to say or nice for Ben to hear if he ever listed this thing, but sometimes faces just don't fit and somebody just decides something. And I think he's decided he's the less good twin, and I think that's it for, you know, I think whilst Eddie's in position, I don't think that Ben's now going to get a look in, and I think that's an absolute joke. Okay, he struggled with his fitness a little bit, but are you telling me he's not, you know, he's not as good as Ludlam or Ludlow or Kenningham? Come on.
Yeah.
He's not, yeah, so he's going to be the 6th best seven. You, come on.
I really struggle to understand that one. I don't understand how you can have a 23-year-old Tom Curry with 33 caps to his name already, and you don't think his identical twin, who's also a professional rugby player, is also at that same level. I think there's a case to be made. Actually, in some instances, Ben is better than Tom. Slightly different players, but you know they are there and thereabouts. So I think that is a shame more than a surprise, and it does kind of feel like in 2 years' time, when it's Richard Cockerill's first England squad or whatever, and he plays Ben Curry, picks Ben Curry, and he has a blinder against South Africa, people are, why haven't we done this in the past? But you know, I think there are a few names in there. I appreciate it's a 45-man squad. But there are a couple of names in there that you look at and you think, you know, are these really the absolute best players at the positions? I don't want to kind of single anyone out because they're all obviously very good players. But you kind of look at Jamie Blamire from Falcons, Trevor Davidson also from Falcons, Kenningham you've already mentioned. There's just a couple of the players in there that you kind of think, are they really the best one or best two or best six in the, you know, in the country, or the best two or three at those positions? Probably not. And I appreciate it's a 45-man squad, but there are some eye-catching selections in there. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, that's just how training squads in particular work. But I think the fact that Sale have four players in there, so, you know, three of which are academy graduates, obviously one of which is Manu Tuilagi, is, again, a testament to the direction the club is going. And obviously, you know, an indication that a lot of the English camp have taken notice of what the club have been doing at domestic level for the past year, because you only have to look at the impacts Rod has made, Quirk has made, obviously Tom Curry and Tuilagi are ever present now, but it really does show that you are rewarded for your form at club level, and to Eddie Jones's credit, there's plenty of diversity in the squad that has been picked, unless you're a Worcester or Irish fan. So with that all being said, I think that's the pod for this week. So massive thank you to James for listening. Alex, I hope you enjoy listening to this on your sun lounger in Greece. Thank you, of course, to all of our listeners for following along and listening and sending us your thoughts on John and Ross's captaincy over the weekend. So that's everything from me. James, anything from you?
Nothing from me, but I just hope that we've got it wrong this week and we're sitting here next week off the back of a 4 or 5 pointer against Exeter.